Welcome back, everyone, to the Chaos Ball Podcast. Another week of ball, another Chaos Ball Podcast. And to preface this one, it's gonna be a short episode. Why? Because my office is a million degrees right now. It is, you know, I was gonna say it's as hot as Jerry DePoto's seat, but that's not entirely accurate because he is gonna be back in 2025 as the Mariners' president of baseball operations. This was just announced right before I started recording this podcast. I am not going to talk about that this episode, I don't think. I literally saw it like 10 minutes before I started recording. I have some thoughts on Jerry DePoto and the ownership group and what it would take to win in Seattle. I don't think this is going to be well received by the fans. Not particularly well received by me personally. I think it could have been a decent time to move on from him heading into yet another crucial offseason for this team. But once I have more thoughts and think about this further, I will comment. So likely the next podcast or going into the offseason and the first podcast after the season's over potentially. But I don't want to just spew out a bunch of nonsense that's currently going around on the top of my head. Just looking on Twitter, people are not pleased. People are not pleased. I think everyone's a little bit tired of Jerry DePoto at this point. I think Jerry DePoto would do well to stay away from the microphone this offseason for his own personal well-being. But that's that. This episode, a short one, we're going to be visiting some former Mariners. We're going to be seeing what some former Mariners are up to these days, just as a little check-in, just to see how things are going. But before I get to that, where are the Mariners at? Well, they're 4.5 back. I think I left last week's episode. They were 3.5 back. By the time the episode came out, I think it was they were four back. I left with a shred of optimism because I'm a fool, an absolute fool. And there's still a shred of optimism, but it's ever dwindling. The Astros did just get swept, which has the shred of hope just hanging on for dear life. And the Mariners took 2 of 3 from the A's and lost 2 of 3 against the Angels, which is quite... Or they split the series with the A's, my bad, 2 of 4. And lost 2 of 3 to the Angels over the weekend, so the Mariners didn't really gain much ground as they should have against the Angels specifically. The A's are not a terrible team, but they didn't gain a whole lot of ground. 4.5 back, they are 5 back of the wild card right now as well. Fangraphs gives the Mariners a 9.3% chance to make the playoffs. And a, let's see, 3.7% chance to clinch the wild card. Yeesh. On June 18th of this year, the Seattle Mariners had a 91.7% chance to make the playoffs, according to Fangraphs. It's almost done. It's almost the complete inverse. They had an 86.3% chance to win the division, according to Fangraphs, at that point. This is when they were up 10 games. That is insane. That is just insane. But I'm not going to dwell on that too much. There's still a shred of hope. I mean, their offense has been playing better for 2 games, which I don't know if I even want to say they're playing better. They had 2 good games against the Oakland Athletics, who don't have an amazing pitching staff. The Oakland A's, the best part of the Oakland A's is their spicy little offense that they've got going. But still 4.5 back with 20 games to go, or 21. Yeah, 21 games to go. Yeah, I mean, that's so bleak. They play the Cardinals, the Padres, the Rangers, Yankees, Rangers, Astros, A's. Like, that is... There's plenty of winnable games in there, but... Playing 3 against the Yanks, 2 against the Padres, that's 5 really tough games. The Cardinals are not an absolutely terrible team. They're not a great team, but they're not terrible. The Rangers are also... The Rangers could be just could kill the season. Seven games against the Rangers, a team they should probably beat. That could be it. That could be it for the season right there. But I'm just not going to talk about that because we'll just see. It's just going to have to play out. So I am testing out a little theory. I haven't watched a game in 2 days on TV. The last three games I haven't watched on TV was yesterday. They won 6-4 against the A's. Wednesday, 16-3 against the A's. And then previously, Friday the 30th of August, they won 9-5 against the Angels. I also didn't watch that game on TV. All the games in between, I did watch on TV, and they lost every one of them. I listened to the game on the radio yesterday, which Rick Riz, I think I might just listen to the radio the rest of the month, regardless of how their win-loss is, when I watch or when I don't watch. Rick Riz is awesome. Dave Sims on the radio, too, was really cool, but Rick Riz, man, I love that guy. I regret not listening to him more this season, to be honest. I'm too much of a sucker. I want to watch the ball, not listen to the ball. But baseball is one of those sports that's pretty elite on the radio. It is really a sport that you don't get that much like of a drawback listening to baseball on the radio, because it's pretty easily described by a good announcer, even a mediocre announcer. Like, you can describe baseball pretty easily via radio. But I digress. Let's get into some former Mariners. Now, I mentioned the Astros just got swept. They got swept by the Cincinnati Reds in Cincinnati at the hands of our very own Ty France. Ty France just had a series to remember against the Astros. Jerry DePoto just playing five-dimensional checkers out here, sending Ty France to the Reds so that once the Mariners were 5.5 back of the Astros in September, he'd contribute to a three-game sweep of the Astros so the Mariners could gain precisely one game on the division. It's just, man, Jerry DePoto, best to ever do it. That's what I always say. Now, Ty France, he went 9-for-11 in this three-game series against the Astros. He had the go-ahead home run yesterday. He's been swinging it really well for Cincinnati, which I'm not even envious of. I don't think he would have hit this well if he stayed in Seattle. It was clearly heading down the toilet. He, since joining the Reds, had, not including yesterday, 30 games, 303 batting average, 360 OBP, 465 slug. That's an 825 OPS. That is a 126 OPS plus. Just hitting the ball really well. Good for him. Just playing a little first base, a little DH for them. They're not especially relevant right now, that team. Unfortunately, I was hoping the Reds would be a little bit more relevant at this point in the year, early in the season. I think one of my predictions was the Reds were going to win that division, and obviously that's not going to happen, and I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. It's not confirmed yet, but it's good to see Ty France hitting. I wish nothing but the best for that man. And he took down the Astros, which is cool. That he's keeping the Mariners' hope alive, which you could look at in a good light for Ty France. You could also look at it in a very negative light for the fact that the Astros and the Mariners are also, they play a huge part in this. Could just put us out of our misery now and get eliminated as quick as possible rather than draw it out and get eliminated on the last like day or two, like they've done what seems like 8 times the past decade. I know it's probably more like 4, but seems like the time they didn't make the playoffs in 2022, it seems like every other season it's coming down to the last weekend and they come up short. And I've just, God, I hope that doesn't, just get eliminated by the middle of the month or roar back and win this division like absolute champions. I don't want an in-between. It's going to be an in-between. They're going to be 2 games back after sweeping the Astros in the last week of the season. They come home against the Oakland A's, and after 2 straight wins, the Mariners are a half game out of first place. And on the last day of the season, Seth Brown hits 4 home runs to eliminate the Mariners from postseason contention on the last day of the season yet again. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But if that happens, I'm buying a lottery ticket. But Ty France, that was an update. Ty France is the only midseason update I'm going to give. The other ones were all trades in the offseason. So we're going to check in with a couple snakes real quick here. And the snakes are enjoying a very good second half. They have been, them and the Padres have been the best teams in baseball in the second half. And some of that has to be credited to Eugenio Suarez, our man, Mr. Vibes. Probably the trade people hated the most this offseason. I think I called the trade, I believe I said it makes sense. I didn't like it, especially emotionally. Did not care for it. I liked Eugenio. I thought he was a useful player. And to dump a useful player as a salary dump, I've said many times, is just bad business. It's a really shitty way to build a team. And when you have a useful third baseman, whether or not he strikes out a lot, shipping him out in the name of cutting down on strikeouts for a package at the time was like, And now it looks so much worse. Carlos Vargas has thrown zero innings for the Seattle Mariners. He has been at Tacoma the whole year and has been quite underwhelming. Sebi Savala was DFA'd within a couple months of the season starting. And Eugenio Suarez had a very, very poor start to the year. But boy, has he freaking picked it up since then. He has been surging on the year. His numbers look great. You would never know he started off poorly. He has a 110 WRC plus, 2.9 Fangraphs WAR. He's playing good defense again. Maybe not quite as elite as last season, but still really solid defense at third base. He's not walking quite as much, but he's also cut down on his own strikeouts. He's just been having a really great year. And yeah, especially in the second half, he's been like one of the big, big hitters on this team that has been one of the better offenses in the league in the second half. And it's just been phenomenal to see. You can actually go, you can go all the way back to the start of July. So since the start of July, he is by WRC plus a top 10 position player in baseball at the dish. At least he is ninth overall in WRC plus since July 1st with a 169, just raking, absolutely raking. Boy, the Mariners could use that. And when I say that, it's a big caveat, because if he was on the 2024 Mariners, do I think he was going to put up a 110 WRC plus? Genuinely, if you think that, I think you're delusional, because it's the Mariners, for Christ's sake. That's not how this works. It's just tough to see. It's tough to see him thriving from a standpoint of like third base has been. Josh Rojas had 1 month where he was the best hitter in baseball, and but otherwise third base has not worked out, which people definitely foresaw happening, going with a platoon over there that hasn't quite worked out. But again, it's like, if he didn't go to Arizona, would he be having this nice 32-year-old season? Probably not, because we just know how this works. If Jorge Polanco stayed on the Twins, I guarantee you he'd be having a better year than he is currently, because that's just how this works. But it's great to see from Eugenio. His 110 WRC plus on the season would put him at fourth on the Mariners' list of hitters, and actually the number one qualified hitter. The only qualified hitters on this Mariners team are Kyle Raleigh and Julio Rodriguez. Both have above average WRC pluses by a little bit right now. But I'm doing this cutoff plate with plate appearances at 100, and currently Victor Robles has a 137 WRC plus with 190 plate appearances. Randy Rosarena has a 129 WRC plus with 149 plate appearances for Seattle. And Luke Raley is just under the qualification standpoint for being fully qualified. He has a 116 WRC plus and 117. And then right after that, Eugenio would slot in there. So really great stuff from Jerry DePoto there. Absolute masterclass. 2.9 F4, that would also put him second on the team. Cool. But good for Eugenio, good for the Snakes. It's easy to root for them, him specifically, but it's also just pretty easy to root for that team. So go off, man. Now to the sad portion of the Snakes. Paul Sewald. Paul Sewald had a tough time of it going over last year. And he has not had a particularly good time this season. He's out of the closer role. He has pitched 38 and two-thirds innings with a 4.19 ERA and a 4.09 FIP to go along with it. Just hasn't been good. I think it's just his locations have been off. I peer in and watch him from time to time, or I have this year. And if he's not locating his fastball up, it can get so ugly. And he has just left some fastballs that touch way too much of the plate this season and get crushed, because it's not a particularly, you know, high velocity fastball. The stuff was always pretty good on it because of how he released it and where he released it from. But if he's going to put it over the plate, it's not going to go well. He is striking out less guys this year, getting hit harder. Just overall, all the results have been way worse. All the signs of just an aging reliever who peaked with Seattle when he was 31 and 32. And, man, we love him in Seattle. And then he's just been slightly downhill since then, which is mega unfortunate. He's still, 2023 overall, his numbers were solid overall in 2023. If you just look at the pure raw stats, he still had a really solid year as a reliever. But you look at the 17 and two-thirds innings he threw with the Diamondbacks after going over at the trade deadline, 3.57 ERA, like, that's still a good reliever. I want to say that. But it's just he was coming over with a 2.93 from the Mariners, and they were expecting a little bit more from him. And this year it's just looked worse, unfortunately. So that is the tough snake that I want to talk about. Now let's move over to Southern California, and let's talk about the most obvious post-Mariners resurgence that everyone saw coming, Teoscar Hernandez. Now, Teoscar Hernandez, good hitter, turns out. Wasn't even a bad hitter with Seattle. He was technically an above-average hitter last year. Struck out a lot of the time, hit the ball hard on occasion, a little bit less than his career averages for sure, but overall, felt like a polarizing player. Felt like a player we expected more from. I think he probably expected more from himself. A guy who is coming off multiple seasons of 130-plus WRC-plus. Puts up a 107 with Seattle last year. Strikes out the most he had struck out in his prime yet in his career. He struck out more as a younger major league player. But since he had really made a name for himself after 2020, 31.1% is the highest strikeout rate. And his power was down. Everything was down for him, and yet he's still an above-average hitter and put up 1.9 Fangraphs WAR, which is, like, not what they wanted from Teoscar Hernandez at all. Like, 2 WAR, obviously it's technically 2 WAR more, 2 wins more than a replacement player, but 2 WAR is right around where I want an average everyday player to be. And Teoscar Hernandez was supposed to be better than that. And he cited reasons being the batter's eye. I think he had really tough time adjusting to Seattle. I think everyone does, especially just getting used to how the ball flies and stuff like that. His defense was also not good at all, and that wasn't making fans like him anymore. And I was pro trying to re-sign him because I still thought he was a good hitter and better than their alternative, which is still true. Even if he put up the same numbers as last year, it would still be better than what they've gotten for Mitch Haniger and Dominic Canzone in 2024 and the rest of those bad outfielders. Randy, Victor Robles aside. 107 is even better than what Julio's put up this year. But I was pro giving him the qualifying offer. I didn't think he was going to accept it. I didn't even think they offered him that, which was really surprising to me. But he goes and signs a couple-year deal with the Dodgers. And if he was going to sign anywhere, I think his offense would have jumped up a little bit. Anywhere else. I think he just needed to get out of Seattle. It was clear he hated hitting there. But he goes to the Dodgers, and it was so abundantly clear that he was going to have another Teoscar year, and he has. He has a 127 WRC plus, comfortably would be the best hitter on the Mariners all year with that type of production, and he's missed like no games. His strikeout rate is 28.4%. That's almost 3% lower than last year. His walk rate is up to almost 8% from 5.6% last year. Just been a way better hitter. Been a lot more like Teoscar Hernandez. He has 28 home runs in 137 games. He had 26 in 160 last year. On pace for his second 30-plus home run year. Still striking out 28.4%. That's still a decent amount of strikeouts. But when it comes with that much power and impact in the baseball, like his slugging is up 50 points this year. His on base is up 30. The walk rate definitely helps. But my whole point with Teoscar is the strikeouts last year. It was like, yeah, we're getting rid of the strikeouts. Like Teoscar strikeouts, Eugenio strikeouts. But it's like when you strike out, these guys also tend to hit the ball hard. If you're hitting the ball hard enough and slugging enough, you're allowed to strike out close to 30%. So I was pro bringing him back. I don't think that was ever a feasible option. The fact that he's put up these numbers is the least surprising thing ever, especially for the Dodgers, who were absolutely going to get the most out of this guy. I also couldn't be happier for him. I love Teoscar. I'm glad he's playing on a legitimately good baseball team, a serious organization, and he's having a really good year. He's going to play in the postseason. He's a really good shot to win a World Series. He's playing with the best player alive. Really good weather. I mean, he's just in such a better situation for himself. And I'm not bitter about it, because if he stayed on the Mariners, he would not be doing this. Maybe he would have had a little bit better of a year, but again, like I said with Eugenio, it's not as easy to just say, oh, he would have put up 127 WRC plus if he stayed with the Mariners and Jerry DePoto re-signed him. No, I don't think that was ever going to happen. I don't think he was ever going to re-sign. So that's that. That is the best Mariner who has left since last season, but still good for him. And now let's check in on our man, Jared Kelnick. Jared Kelnick, another guy I dubbed a useful player last year that got traded in a salary dump with Evan White and Marco Gonzalez in one of the weirder trades that Jerry DePoto's ever made. I can say that confidently, and he's made lots of trades, but that was a bizarre one, and they got two guys who haven't thrown a pitch professionally, I believe, this year. Both are hurt. Many people on the internet would call me anti-Jared Kelnick. I guess you could say that. I just didn't really believe in him after seeing after 20 games of 2022, when he had like more than 100 under his belt, I just wasn't buying it. I didn't see it. And then he put up an insanely cool month of April in 2023 and ended the season technically 10% better than league average, according to WRC plus, despite the numbers not looking great. It was only in 105 games after, the infamous cooler incident when that cooler viciously attacked his foot. And shipping him out, I wasn't happy because I still thought he was better than their alternatives. I really did. And I still thought he was a useful player with upside at the very least. There was still upside there. And you shipped them off in a salary dump. Again, bad business. Just unserious. Just an unserious way to try to build a baseball team. A lot of people saw this as a catastrophe. A lot of fans, I don't want to call them non-ball knowers, but they kind of are, on the internet, were very upset because they thought Jared Kelnick was still going to be a star. I called it blind optimism. People got mad at me. People said they wouldn't trade Kelnick for Juan Soto. That was just like one person on Twitter, which, boy, that, oh. But he gets traded to the Braves. He starts out the season very odd. It was a very odd start to the season. He was hitting really well, theoretically, but he was hitting for like no power. It was a lot of BABIP. It was a lot of average, a lot of just hits. No, not a lot of home runs. And since then, it's just been bad. On the season, he's played 123 games. That's 425 plate appearances. He is slashing 232, 283, 395, 86 WRC plus, 30.4% strikeout rate, 6.6% walk rate. Those are both above and below low league average. respectively. 0.5 F WAR. Really just a really bad season for him. I'm not wishing for him to not succeed. I genuinely do want this baseball robot man to succeed in the bigs. I just never really saw it after his debuts. An 86 WRC plus is not good. You want to know whose WRC plus is 86? Dominic Canzone. Do you want to know whose WRC plus is 85? Mitch Haniger. Do you want to know whose WAR is 0 and 0 point, or negative 0.5? Both of those guys. Dominic Canzone at 0 F WAR. Mitch Haniger has point, negative 0.5. So technically, Jared Kelnick would have still been a useful player on the Mariners compared to those two guys. And even let's compare him to freaking Mitch Garver. Mitch Garver, the worst hitter, 84 WRC plus, with at least played 100 plate appearances on this baseball team, with the same F WAR as Mitch Haniger. So if they kept Kelnick, it genuinely wouldn't have been as bad as trading for Mitch Haniger. And you know what Kelnick doesn't cost next year that Mitch Haniger does? Like $14 million. Mitch Garver, like 12, I think, next year. Dominic Canzone's still cheap, I guess. But, God, it just... You can look at Kelnick and be like, ah, oh, Jerry DePoto got rid of a rotten apple there. Did he? Maybe he did. But he didn't meaningfully upgrade the position. Theoretically, Robles and Arozarena are upgrades. Luke Raley as a left-handed hitting outfielder is an upgrade. Absolutely. But they didn't have Robles or Randy until for Robles 2 months ago and Randy a month ago. I'm not saying they should have kept Jared Kelnick. It was just they got if Jackson Cower and Cole Phillips never throw a pitch for the Mariners, so be it. If they contribute even a little bit, I still think this trade is just ridiculous. And I feel bad for Jared Kelnick. I really did want him to succeed on the Braves. It's been a real bad year for that team as a whole. But Jared Kelnick, not a good year. And the Jared Kelnick believers on the internet are silent. Silent, I tell you. But even so, he would still be a marginally better player than the two other outfielders Dominic Canzone and Mitch Haniger, who have played 67 and 112 games for the Mariners in 2024. That is one of the many reasons why they're 4.5 back of the Astros and only one game above 500 right now. Just a real shame. Just a real shame. We'll see what weird trades Jerry DePoto can make this offseason, because we know he'll be there. I think I'm going to end it. I am sweltering. My office is so, so hot right now. I'm avoiding talking about the on-field play at the moment. I just wanted to check in with those couple guys. And this one's just going to be a short listen. And they go to St. Louis, the Seattle Mariners. They go to St. Louis. Maybe while you're listening to this, they're playing the Cardinals. And then they got the Padres at home, then the Rangers at home. And that is... How many games is that? 9 games? I mean, they could be out of it by the time I next record. They could be closer. Knowing them, they will be closer. Like I said, they're going to make this as painful as possible for the fans. I am sure of it. But I'll leave you here. Hopefully they beat the Cardinals. And then they have, at least they have a homestand. It's a long homestand. Padres, Rangers, Yankees. That is a 9-game homestand. And then they go to Texas for their final road trip of the year. Win at home for the fans. No matter what, I think there's going to be a lot of fans at those games. Fans deserve to see winning baseball. Whether or not you make the playoffs at the end of the season, they deserve some winning baseball, so please play it. 16 runs against the A's, and then 6. The offense has looked okay for 2 straight games. That is astounding. Can they continue it in St. Louis? Let's freaking hope so. Let's hope they just absolutely go on a tear and the Houston Astros have a demise we haven't seen since the California Angels in 1995 in the AL West. I think you're familiar what happened and who won that division. So let's hope the Astros take a page out of the 1995 California Angels book and have a demise. But I'll leave you there. Hope you have a good rest of the week. I will probably be back next week. If I am not, I will update on my Twitter, which is at ChaosBall1977. If you haven't, you should follow me on Twitter. That is where I get most of my tweets off. I don't just talk about them on this show. I'm actually saying them on the internet. I know. But hope you have a good rest of the week. Of course, still, as always, until the end of the season, go Mariners.